This is Asia in Focus from Control Risks, the global specialist risk consultancy. Each episode of Asia in Focus brings you in-depth analysis and perspective from our experts in Asia Pacific on the issues that matter most to businesses.
Hi, everyone. It's Angela Mancini, partner at Control Risks, and I head the Asia Pacific Markets Group. It's been 1 month since Indonesia went to the polls to vote for president, and we're still waiting for Indonesia's General Election Commission to finalize the official results. And actually, there's now been recently calls for a legislative investigation into alleged irregularities related to outgoing President Jokowi's support during the race and other issues. But it does look like we're going to have former General Prabowo Subianto in power, with about 80% of polls being counted and him taking just shy of 60% of the vote. He will be sworn in October, so we still have 7 months to go. Investors are happy in the sense that they see him as a pro-business candidate, and they're relieved at the policy continuity that they expect that they will see. But there's a lot of time between now and October for jockeying for power at the cabinet level, and there's questions around where Indonesia might be from a fiscal perspective and whether or not the respected finance minister Sri Mulyani Indrawati is going to stay, and if she doesn't, what that means for the fiscal health of the country. All to say, there's a lot to unpack. We've got a lot of our clients who are heavily invested in Indonesia or looking at it as a strong growing market, calling us, asking us what to make of what's happening there politically, and most importantly, what it means for businesses as we go forward. So here to discuss this with us today is our lead analyst for Indonesia, Ahmad Sukasorno. He has been covering Indonesia for over 20 years as an analyst, first as a reporter, covering all the key issues in Indonesia from 2000 to 2010, some really critical years, and then most recently as an analyst, and has been on our podcast series previously in the months before the election to talk about what we might expect.
Prabowo means political certainty, means policy continuation, and all of that will lead to business opportunities in a growing Indonesia. However, his style also means you have to align with his political and business interests. You have to partner with people he knows, and you have to understand that it is about Indonesia rising. Businesses who can understand those key concepts will succeed and will ride along this rise to become top 10 of the world's economy.
We'll get right to it. Let's start first with the basics about the election. What will the Election Commission announce from the February 14th election, and what will happen after the announcement?
Angela, thank you for having me in the show. Yes, for all intents and purposes, we must accept that Defense Minister Prabowo Subianto will be the President of Indonesia from October 2024 to October 2029, if this 70-year-old is blessed with good health. So the Election Commission will announce that no runoff is needed because it is without doubt that Prabowo has collected far more than the necessary 50% of votes after getting 10% more than pollsters expected. Now, this wide gap, which majorly came after Jokowi used his influence as a sitting president to back Prabowo, is a source of contention. And next month, we will see legal challenges filed by PDIP. That's the current ruling party that Jokowi betrayed. However, it is very unlikely that these lawsuits will win. There will be some consolation for the PDIP that will likely gain the highest number of DPR seats, parliament seats. However, even that will be spoiled by the prospect that parties behind the Prabowo-Jokowi alliance will form a majority in the next house, turning PDIP into an opposition party if it refuses to join that coalition. So the 14 February vote actually showed Jokowi is far more popular than his own party, and he is the man that masses trust.
Wow. Okay. So longtime followers of Indonesia's will know Prabowo as an unpredictably belligerent general and the son-in-law of course, authoritarian President Suharto. And in the late 1990s, he was actually even banned from the U.S. and fired from the Indonesian army for allegations of human rights abuse. This is his third try for the presidency, and he's actually looks like he's got it this time. Some said that he could never overcome those challenges to actually get to power. How did he get elected? And then again, what can businesses expect from him?
This 60% result definitely defies predictions. But this unpredictable result is actually easy to explain. Like, through Jokowi, Prabowo won votes that should have gone to the PDIP candidate Ganjar Pranowo, who failed to win any province. Ganjar Pranowo even lost in his own province of Central Java that he governed for 10 years because Jokowi also comes from that province, and voters there trust Jokowi's choice more than PDIP's. So when Jokowi increased his meddling through the use of state agencies, including the police, the military, the bureaucracy, it just showed that the president was really behind Prabowo in the crucial last week before the vote. With that, game over, right? The message was very clear from the president. One round is better for the economy than a long election season that would distract everyone from the task of maintaining the pace of Indonesia's growth. Now, this pattern of prioritizing what is best for the economy over what is best for Indonesia's democracy also hints what lies ahead for Indonesia. Jokowi betrayed PDIP and smudged democracy for the sake of policy continuation and protection of his family legacy, all because Jokowi is no longer a reformer. He is now a dynasty builder. The man of the masses is now actually a member and an exponent of the political elite, just like Prabowo. Now, what does this mean for businesses in the next 5 years? Indonesia will be more predictably elitist than Jokowi's first term when he was a greenhorn in national politics, when he did not belong to any elite circle. There were experiments with Jokowi appointees, adjustments that he had to do with his own party. There were misalignments of programs. Positively, that actually showed that Jokowi depended on a diversity of people to help him settle. But negatively, it took time before he could develop a steady leadership and provide predictability for businesses. We will not find this awkwardness with Prabowo. He comes from four of the five elite circles in Indonesia. As a general, he's a military elite. As a son of a minister, son-in-law of a president, he was politically elite before he jumped into politics. As his family is one of the richest in the country with sprawling businesses, he is part of the business elite. As a son of the professor who designed Indonesia's modern economy, he belongs to the academic elite. Now, this background alone means Prabowo will not need a Sherpa in navigating through national politics and will have a very clear direction on who should be in his team. They will be from those four elite circles. And he will already know everyone in person, as mostly they will come from old elite clans. Indonesia under Prabowo will have a vibe similar to Indonesia under Suharto, as power will be in the hands of people who know each other. So businesses, you'll know who they are and you will know what they want.
Okay, so you're implying a return to oligarchy right at a time where there's still concern for corruption in Indonesia, but right when they're trying to develop the economy, grow even faster than they have in the past. And it's a really bright spot, especially, again, given the geopolitical considerations and de-risking from China and the rest of it. What does this mean, actually, for our listeners that are running businesses with exposure to Indonesia? Doesn't a return to oligarchy mean that Indonesia's high levels of corruption, for example, won't be tackled?
Angela, before I answer that, I would like to clarify that Indonesia under Prabowo will also slightly differ from the pro-business Suharto or Jokowi eras. Look, the other reason why Prabowo won, and this is a fact that many do not talk about, was that Prabowo actually represents Indonesia of today. He represents an electorate that is rising in confidence due to the current economic growth that itself is riding on a demographic bonus that Indonesia is enjoying. So Prabowo is the choice of the young majority that is unbothered by Prabowo's past. And this young Indonesia is more excited about his constant projection of power because that resonates in present time Indonesia. So you will see an Indonesia that is more confident than ever in voicing its national interests and economic goals. This is good for business because Prabowo and the support behind him want more foreign investment that can fuel more economic growth for Indonesia so that this country could rise from being the 16th biggest economy in the world to the top 10 or even the top 6 before Prabowo's term ends. And for that, he promises continuation of Jokowi's pro-growth policies and programs, like the downstream agenda and the capital city relocation. And he promises political stability as power now will be more centralized with him and his small support system. Now, the last time Indonesia grew with such stability, around 7% annually, was between 1990 to 1997, when Suharto, Prabowo's father-in-law, ruled the country with the same mantra of political certainty, economic pragmatism, and policy continuation with power concentrated in the center. This is what Prabowo aspires, and he could deliver it if he stays mentally and physically healthy. As Indonesia grows as an economy, there will be more opportunities for businesses to invest and expand along with the swelling of the market, which is almost like 300 million people, and many of which will be new members of Indonesia's burgeoning middle class. Isn't this predictability and growth what businesses want from Indonesia? To assist him, Prabowo will form a cabinet full of people with the same kind of pro-growth aspirations, most of which will be businessmen, with many of them coming from elite families like himself. There will be little experiment here because he already knows what his ministers can deliver. However, there will also be no special gatekeeper. In the Jokowi era, it was in the form of coordinating minister for investment affairs, Luhut Panjaitan, who was the mastermind behind Jokowi policies and programs. Why did Luhut exist? Because Jokowi needed a trustee with experience to help him navigate national politics, and Luhut, his business partner, provided that because he was a general, a trade minister, and an ambassador before he made a fortune through his coal and timber empire that now owns Jokowi's furniture company. Prabowo, on the other hand, does not need someone like Luhut to hold his hand. He will lead everything himself, like a commander, like a CEO. He will be aided by his tycoon brother, who might not even enter the cabinet. Prabowo will treat his cabinet like his assistants. He will treat his finance minister like his banker. And even he will pick a finance minister from the banking world. Now, this world is not alien to him because his grandfather founded Indonesia's first bank and his brother-in-law once led the central bank. He will also put business trustees in charge of priority sectors like mining, energy, industry, and agriculture. And they might come from his family conglomerate or businesses run by his associates. One hint, even the foreign minister will be a tycoon. The same guy who ran his campaign and the same guy who was Indonesia's ambassador to the US.
We will return to the conversation with Ahmad in a minute. Please click on the link in our podcast notes to follow our Asia in Focus podcast series, where we will be bringing regular updates from all across the region. And if you're looking for more of our Indonesia analysis, please do visit our website at www.controlrisk.com. And now let's continue with the conversation. Okay, so you're saying that there's not going to be one single gatekeeper. However, power will be more concentrated, given the way you just outlined the potential cabinet. Let's turn for a moment to what this means for businesses, for people, again, that are running businesses that are exposed to Indonesia or want to get into Indonesia in a bigger way. if business can better predict now who to go through, what to expect, and how to create alignments because that power is more concentrated, doesn't this make Indonesia a more risky environment because businesses will need to deal with a lot of politically exposed people? Corruption and politically exposed people are some of the main issues our clients have dealt with as they're trying to work through and succeed in Indonesia. How can our clients mitigate this risk given the situation you just outlined?
Well, that is the Achilles heel in any oligarchic government, right? You just cannot separate business and politics. I have to admit, businesses will have little option other than aligning with the interests of Prabowo and his elite associates. Businesses will have to partner with these business vehicles of the elite if they really want to operate with ease in Indonesia. It does look like the Suharto era. Engaging with political exposed persons and politically linked entities is a given if you do want to jump into the bandwagon of Prabowo's growing Indonesia. So for businesses that highly regard ethical compliance, corporate governance, and ESG concerns, there is no other way than conducting robust due diligence on prospective partners before entry and plotting sophisticated exit strategies to preempt calamity before things go south with these PAPs. Among those in Prabowo's circle, there are some good apples with credible business records, and there are some bad apples with reputation of being difficult when things no longer produce rosy results. The onus on foreign businesses is picking those good apples in the basket. They will not only promise operational ease and incentives, but also confidence for foreign businesses when they have to sail through the storm. One of the ways to do this due diligence is really knowing your partner. Businesses also must thoroughly conduct stakeholder mappings in the sectors and locations where their assets exist. Like, knowing who to trust in business and politics in a Prabowo presidency is an important key to success. Besides knowing when to enter and exit this economy, of course, whether the business can score a bonanza or become a bust is totally dependent on this mastery of granular knowledge. What businesses also need to know is the anti-corruption drive will be selective. It kind of discourages people from, let's just say, places with very strong and stringent anti-corruption laws, and it's discouraging for Indonesia's anti-corruption drive overall. But I cannot imagine Prabowo burning his own circles. Now, the ones that will be prosecuted, and Prabowo will still allow KPK to prosecute people, those who will be prosecuted are those who are outside those circles, or those who dare defy him as a commander. And this can include PDIP stalwarts and business associates if this party, this current ruling party, fails to join his bandwagon. Now, a lot of businesses have attached themselves to PDIP, let's just say Sherpas. So this can be a risk. Businesses should know that while Prabowo is pro-business, he is first and foremost a nationalist and an elite. So he will follow those lines first rather than the common interests among businesses. He will advocate control over resources, and he will unapologetically ban exports of mineral ores or other raw products in the name of nationalism, despite the policy's effect towards global supply chains, despite the policy's effect towards commodity prices. And those that defy or rubbish this move will face the wrath of being deprioritized from enjoying Indonesia's rise. So if Western countries feel that this is not the way to go, China will take that space. And Indonesia will not be shy in taking China's offer.
Okay, so let me press you further on that before we move into our last question. You're describing a situation where, again, if you're a Western business trying to operate cleanly and effectively there, You've got stakeholders that almost certainly will be politically exposed. You've got a potential for risk of being caught up in an anti-corruption crackdown simply because your partner maybe isn't in Prabowo's inner circle. And you've got the risk, as you just outlined, of potential export controls on key minerals or other issues, maybe that other products that Prabowo may feel that isn't wise for him to allow free export of. What does that then mean for business? I guess, said another way, is it possible for businesses who've been operating there now to still be able to operate while tackling corruption in their businesses and actually having policy certainty around some of their key exports? Or are you painting a picture that's looking a lot darker for Western businesses in terms of operational risk?
I'm painting a picture that is a lot more predictable, actually, for businesses. Why? Because now you know who are in the pyramid of power. During the Jokowi era, sometimes there is some kind of confusion who calls the shots. We will not have that anymore. Just like in the Suharto days, you know who to meet, you know who to talk to, you know where the lines are drawn. So you understand your playing field. Now, it sounds negative, but in that pyramid, you also can find very credible, very good people in businesses. And the reason is because these elite families, they're second generation, many of them are educated in the West. Many of them understand the concerns of the Western companies. Many of them actually appreciate ethical compliance and all of that. The key, again, is finding those good apples in the basket. And the only way to do that is having a robust due diligence process and also a very sophisticated stakeholder mapping. You can no longer pick only because that person looks profitable or helpful. You have to understand whether that person has connections and can keep those connections clean and strong.
Yeah, understand. That's great. So one final question for you. Let's draw from recent history in another Southeast Asia country, which is the Philippines. So as we know, a return to the old ways and a president using his child as a clincher and supporting the candidacy of a successor who happens to be related to a former dictator, driving high growth. All of this sounds like the Philippines in 2022 when Duterte came to power. But now the Marcos-Duterte alliance is failing. So I want to ask you if we might expect some similar deterioration also in Indonesia.
Isn't it funny how Indonesia has mirrored the Philippines? I mean, I really cannot find any other comparison. And you cannot script this, right? Return to the old regime, facilitated by a political outsider who has become royalty again, and then uses an offspring to seal the alliance. It's very hard to find any other comparison. And both Prabowo and Bongbong, they want to correct history by leaving a more polished legacy for their families and for themselves as pro-business presidents. You really cannot make these things up, right? However, when you compare and contrast, you also see the differences. Now, the biggest one here is the Indonesian actors do not want to change the script, while Bongbong wants to change the constitution so that he could run longer than he is scheduled. Now, at 72, Prabowo has no intent to rule more than 2 5-year terms like the Indonesian constitution allows. He even could stop at one term if his health fails to cope with the burden of the job. Meanwhile, Jokowi understands that excessive intervention when he is no longer president will only harm the position of his son as Prabowo's deputy, as any Indonesian president can easily isolate his VP. And as a commoner who had to play things very carefully under an elite leader in his own party before he himself became an elite, Jokowi masters the art of calmly influencing situations. He is the opposite of boisterous Duterte. even if Jokowi and Prabowo do not meet eye to eye on a serious matter, they will be unlikely to speak bad of each other in public like Marcos and Duterte have been doing in the past few weeks. The evidence has been very clear these past 2 weeks because Jokowi just granted Prabowo an extra star on his shoulder to make the latter a full general 25 years after his dismissal from the army. Now, that's a very, very kind gesture. And that special gesture of collaboration will likely lead Prabowo to bestow Jokowi the position of the head of the Presidential Advisory Council after the October transition of power. These are confidence-building measures that suggest a deterioration of their partnership will need a very, very serious trigger. And with Prabowo unlikely to change the constitution for his own stay in power, it is actually hard to find that serious trigger. Unless Prabowo cancels the capital city project or the downstream agenda. Now, this will be impossible because his family business actually benefits from these programs. His family owns land around the capital city, the new capital city, and his family wants to expand their business into downstream. Another trigger could be if Prabowo harms or fails to protect Jokowi's children. But that's something that has, let's just say, no sign of happening because Prabowo has no interest to do it. So Indonesia under Prabowo is not only more predictable than Indonesia under Jokowi, but also compared to similarly growing Philippines under Marcos, it is still more predictable.
So last question for you. What's the key takeaway for business?
The takeaway is a Prabowo presidency promises policy continuation, political certainty, and business opportunities in an Indonesia that is rising in confidence. However, his style also means investors must align with his political and business interests and partner with politically exposed persons. Those who will succeed are those who also invest in due diligence and stakeholder mapping, and that will decide whether the investment is a boon or a bust.
Terrific. Great discussion. Thank you so much, Ahmad, for the conversation. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. That's all for today's Asia in Focus. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to our podcast channel so that you receive all new episodes just as soon as they're released.
If you enjoyed what you heard on this episode of Asia in Focus, be sure to subscribe. And make sure to check out our other podcasts as well. All of our podcasts are available wherever you listen. Just search Control Risks. You can follow all of our analysis and find out how we're helping businesses build organizations that are secure, compliant, and resilient by visiting controlrisks.com.